Hey everybody, as is and shall e'er remain tradition, that was Have Gun Will Travel with Resist the Machine. Welcome to Shock Talk. Tonight's going to be a short one. We had a long, hard week under the broiler here in the tropics, and all I want to do is remind people of the things we should never forget. You feel me?
Hey internet friends, what's going down in the next few weeks? For this video, I want us to step back and really take in the scenery and zoom out. What do the scriptwriters have planned for us? Well, they gave us a little clue, effective September 27, 2024, with Directive 5240.01, perhaps the most unsexy title ever known to man. I've lost some of you already with that one, but what if I told you the directive has granted the U.S. military the power to help with domestic law enforcement actions, including the use of deadly force against U.S. citizens in some situations just weeks before the 2024 election? What does it all mean? And most importantly, why now?
So I want to say this plain and simple. There is no place for political violence in America, period. None, ever.
Are you confident that there will be a peaceful transfer of power in January 2025?
If Trump wins, no, I'm not confident at all. I mean, if Trump loses, I'm not confident at all.
A fair election and that it will be peaceful.
Two separate questions.
Very much.
I'm confident it'll be free and fair. I don't know whether it'll be peaceful.
For a little context, on July 26, 1947, President Harry S. Truman signed the National Security Act, creating the Department of Defense along with a bunch of other alphabet agencies. This act merged the Army, the Air Force, the Navy, all into one. And with the oversight of all these military branches, the DoD issues these directives to standardize these operations. And you should know that these directives provide clear guidance on procedures, responsibilities, and strategies. And that these directives provide clarity on how the military coordinates with other agencies. Like I said before, if you're still with me, you're one of the few, because all of this sounds so boring, doesn't it? But it's anything but boring. It's very serious. So this directive was reissued right before the November election, which is no coincidence, and it's saying, quote, defense intelligent components may provide personnel to assist a federal department or agency, including a federal law enforcement agency, or a state or local law enforcement agency when lives are in danger, end quote. It goes on to say that the military can use lethal force under specific conditions, primarily when assisting law enforcement in scenarios deemed critical for national security or when lives are in danger. And it honestly makes me think of January 6th scenarios as fake or manufactured as they might be. But let's zoom out here. The Posse Comitatus Act of 1878 is a law that prevents U.S. military from performing law enforcement activities within the United States, ensuring a separation between military and civilian governance. This act was put into place to prohibit federal troops from enforcing domestic policies and laws. But this new directive, this new order, seems to get around this problem of posse comitatus by focusing on assistance in urgent situations. Again, this directive was written by unelected randos, not legislation from selected / elected officials. They're not even pretending anymore, is what I'm saying. On paper, the military is trained for war and trained to kill the enemy, right? Just like how on paper, the police are trained to protect and serve the community. So would the military follow orders in this scenario? Would they fire upon their fellow citizens? You gotta acknowledge that a lot of good people were purged from the military during the COVID era for refusing to follow orders and inject themselves. I mean, I hope not. I don't have the answer. But it seems like the next several years will be a masterclass on what it means to be an American patriot. Like, will patriotism become a liability at some point in the near future? It seems like the very essence of what America stands for is at a crossroads here. And it doesn't really even matter in a major way who becomes president, because we have millions of illegals flooding into the country. We have the dollar in free fall. We have hyperinflation, and we have forever wars. Partner that with nonstop psychological warfare on the population, especially children, a crumbling infrastructure and weather warfare. We've got a situation on our hands. And I guess you could point out that the U.S. military has been used to kill civilians since its inception, a fact which I don't really like to bring up because it doesn't really stir feelings of red, white, and blue and, I don't know, apple pie and watching football on Sundays and being outgoing and friendly with strangers, and I'll stop there. Think U.S. Civil War, or even the Whiskey Rebellion, or the Kent State Massacre, or Waco, where the Army Delta Force killed women and children in the most horrible ways imaginable. So it's happened before.
U.S. military now is authorized to kill Americans on U.S. soil. Mm. That can't be possible.
Yeah.
This would open up the door for the careless use, and if more frequent, and legal. It'll be legal now, so nobody will have to worry about that. Send in the troops. We need you to shoot a couple of these people.
Yeah.
They're opposing our policies. They're demonstrating against COVID rules or something they'll come up with. So I think it's very, very dangerous.
Responding with assets with potential for lethality, and I underline this, I highlighted it, or any situation where it is reasonably foreseeable that providing the requested assistance may involve the use of force that is likely to result in lethal force, including death or serious bodily injury. I'm sorry to bog the discussion down with that, Dr. Ball, but I really wanted to hone in on this as their actual document. It's not just someone's analysis.
I've seen one FEMA agent since I've been here. He approached the front gate of our facility, and his request was, get this, cooperate with local government. Hey, you guys need to cooperate. We're like, what are you talking about?
We
have, look at all the law enforcement here. Look at all the firefighters here.
Yeah.
We've been reported to the authorities for domestic terrorism.
Yeah.
We're a bunch of special operation veterans. It doesn't get any more American than what we're doing.
Yeah,
we're here to help the people.
The reissuing of this directive alone is troubling, but back at the beginning of the year, a group of lawmakers from both sides of the aisle started pushing for a change to the Constitution. This change would allow members to be quickly replaced if there was a mass casualty event. Curiously, this was all proposed back in March, and there were a few articles about it then. But in the past month, it's really been pushed out to the public by mainstream media. The Constitution actually mandates that the House vacancies be filled by special elections. After 9/11, Congress passed new rules stating that following a mass casualty event, special elections would need to be held within 49 days. But now what they want to do is for House members to give the governors a list of like 5 people as their possible replacement. They say this would allow for the continuity of government and it would keep the political balance so one side doesn't have more representatives than the other, resulting from targeted attacks or even disaster. And now representatives are saying that they absolutely need this amendment because of the uptick in political threats. Interesting timing, right? What do they have planned?
You weren't supposed to hear this. Every system has a name. Democracy, socialism, capitalism. But the one you're living in right now, they never told you its name. Because the moment you know it, you'll see every single move they make. They've replaced landowners with data lords, armies with algorithms, and the taxes you pay are hidden inside every tap, every swipe, and every decision. They've built something I call technocratic feudalism, and inside it, they run a program called manufactured friction. It's the reason why you're never allowed peace for long. The reason why there's always a crisis, a feud, or a fight. Chaos isn't a mistake. Is the business model. But chaos alone isn't enough. They've turned your life into compliance capitalism, where you don't just pay for access, you have to prove obedience. Every border, every transaction, every digital checkpoint is a test. Are you still following the script? And if you think this is just your country, you've already lost, because this is corporate colonialism 2.0. Nations are bought with debt. Governments are just regional offices, and your president isn't the CEO, he's customer service. And at the top, you have a few root access holders. Below them, you have protocol enforcers, and at the bottom is us. End users in their sandbox running side quests while they collect the gold. And here is the part you're not meant to realize. The fight was never between left and right, race and race, man and woman. It is between the owners of the system and everyone trapped inside it. And the moment enough of us stop playing their game, the system collapses. That's why they'll keep you distracted until your last breath. So now you know the name, and you can never unknow it.
It's October 2015, a chilly day in autumn. John Brennan receives a weird phone call. It seems to be coming from a stranger. He hesitates a second, then picks up.
Hello?
John Brennan?
Who is this?
You're a f***ing loser.
If John Brennan hadn't been John Brennan, this might have looked like an ordinary prank call. But John Brennan happens to be one of the most powerful men on Earth, the head of the CIA.
Who is this? How did you get this number?
It was so f***ing easy, bro. You're such a d***.
What do you want?
I don't want anything. I already f***ing own you.
How much do you want?
We want $5 trillion.
The US government will classify this call as part of a larger conspiracy of identity theft, harassment of government officials, and cyber terrorism. The caller will pay a heavy price for this moment of trollish glory.
Why are you doing this?
We want you to stop bombing the Middle East.
Across the Atlantic, in a house in the West Midlands of England, a 15-year-old kid in his room, the phone still in his hand. He can't believe what he just did. He calls himself Kraka, and he loves to smoke weed. In fact, he's high right now. He's also the leader of Krakas with Attitude. He and his companions terrorized and embarrassed the US security apparatus to a near incomparable degree. They leaked the personal data of police officers, FBI agents, and DOJ officials. They hand-delivered top-secret documents to Julian Assange. Some of the most publicized hacktivism attributed to Anonymous.
They call themselves Anonymous.
Yeah, it was actually them. In part, for the lulz. And this is their story. 2008 in Virginia. A different kid, who only calls himself Default. He is a pretty typical American teenager. He loves soccer, video games, and his dog. He often clashes with his father, who works in the government. At some point, Default starts cheating in his video games. This gives him the first taste of using computers to do things that you're not supposed to. Exciting, powerful things. He starts learning all that he can about how computers work, and how to get them to bend to your will. 2008 was an exciting time to get into hacking. The decentralized hacktivist group, Anonymous, was in its heyday. If you managed to get into their secret chats, you got a front seat view of their actions.
Anonymous is one of the biggest online vigilante groups. Members hack into companies and governments.
Now a worldwide and widely recognized hacking group.
Hackers with the group Anonymous.
Citizens of the world, we have seen the erosion of due process.
A cyber war.
Anonymous has struck again.
Young Default is fascinated. Anonymous embodies an exciting spirit of freedom through chaos. They showed how you could force the whole world to pay attention without you having to leave your bedroom. Some Anonymous actions are political, some are just trolling. And Default, after tasting this very new kind of power, is keen to learn everything he can about hacking. He starts to hack random websites just for the challenge of it, just to see if he can. But after hanging around Anonymous's chats for a while, he starts to find the group, well, cringe. For one thing, it's crawling with feds. People are getting arrested, and it's tough to know who to trust. Anonymous has become so big that vetting people becomes difficult. There's tons of infighting and doxing. Since it's the only hacktivist group most media outlets know about, Anonymous keeps getting credited for the work of other, often more sophisticated hackers. It's a mess. So Default gets involved with offshoot hacker groups, one of them called AnonSec. The group positions itself as anti-Anonymous. But similar to Anonymous, AnonSec performs operations, hacking initiatives that sometimes have a political purpose, and sometimes are just, as one might say in 2008, for the lulz. AnonSec is quite advanced, and Default gets better and better at the game. The group controls a botnet. A botnet is essentially a large pack of infected computers under someone's control. You can use those computers to further spread malware across the internet to make the botnet larger and larger. Or you could, for example, attack a server with it in order to overload it. Default is tapping around AnonSec's botnet and gets curious about what computers they've actually gotten under their control. He finds that one is a server of the Canadian Medical School, Windsor University. Suddenly, Default finds himself with direct access to the university's finances. He pulls up records of students who owe the school money. It all adds up to $9.4 million. And at the bottom of the list, something very tempting. A delete all button. How could he not push it?
These people might, really enjoy having their slate wiped clean, as it were. If you look, some of them owe a substantial amount of money, like $70,000. I think some people owed upwards of over $100,000. It's a lot of money. You know what I'm saying? It's just like perpetual debt that sometimes it just lasts for decades. So just delete everything. I went into the PHP shell and just like sent everything to DevNull and just like shredded it. Whatever I sent there is just not coming back.
This is from the podcast Darknet Diaries. They have a fantastic episode with Default. Of course, this story poses some questions. We tried asking the university if the debt stayed deleted. They did not answer. But usually student loans have multiple on and offline and offsite backups. There should be hard copies of the student signed loan agreements. However, Default feels like he's really doing something at the time. There is a certain rush to committing a crime when it feels like doing the right thing. Other hackers might have used the sensitive student information to make a profit. There's actually a shadow industry worth billions surrounding our most sensitive data. So-called data brokers gather all the info available about us on the internet, your contact information, browsing history, and online transactions. This data is often bundled into shadow profiles, which are then being sold. You might receive a tailored mail or a robocall based on your shadow profile. In the worst case, someone might try to steal your identity. More and more of Default's hacks are motivated by altruism rather than just curiosity. As recently as 2014, bestiality was legal in Denmark. Other European countries, Germany, the UK, Sweden, had recently banned it. What this meant for Denmark was an increase in animal sex tourism. For years, Danish animal rights activists tried to bring attention to this.
They called them dog brothels. So sick. It's so crazy. And I had a dog, so that really pissed me off just thinking about the fact, what if someone took my dog and that happened to my dog? I would freak out.
So, as Default describes it, he and other Anon Sec hackers lend their technical skills to the animal rights movement.
So, I think we took down the official Denmark government website, and then we actually defaced it and said, did you know that your government allows bestiality? And there's bestiality dens where people can go and pay money to do these things to animals. And most of them are like people's pets.
They shut down bestiality websites via DDoS attacks and tweet evidence of sexually mistreated animals. The information reverberates around the world and is widely condemned. Anonymous gets credit for Anon Sec's actions, which deeply annoys Default. But it works. In part due to the hacks, more people know about Danish dog brothels. They talk about them online, protest them, until the case winds up in Parliament. In April 2015, Denmark finally bans bestiality. While Default is leveling up as a hacker, he also becomes an early adopter of crypto. He accumulates a significant amount of Bitcoin, more than 1,000. This would amount to a lot of money today, somewhere around 40 million US dollars. He keeps these Bitcoins on a hard drive in his room. He also knows he's making powerful enemies, so he gets a bit paranoid, a bit fanatical with his OPSEC. He never logs into his own Wi-Fi, for one. He uses a satellite dish to log into a free Dairy Queen Wi-Fi half a mile away. He's always connecting through a Tor node. Every time he turns off his devices, he makes sure they're encrypted. When he turns them back on, he has to wait 30 minutes for them to decrypt. For the most part, he never tells anybody what he is doing. He knows he has a lot to lose. Ultimately, it won't be enough. Back in May 2013, a 29-year-old US intelligence contractor also has a lot to lose. He has his own home in Honolulu, a loving girlfriend, and a salary of over $200,000 per year. But he's discovered a huge secret, and it's too big to keep. The US government has the ability to spy on pretty much any man, woman, child on Earth who has come into contact with a computer. And this contractor, unwittingly, has helped to make that technology possible. He's haunted by this information and horrified that his government is violating its public civil rights so egregiously. He knows that revealing this information to anyone, a lawyer, a judge, or even Congress, would be committing felonies so severe that he would spend a lifetime in prison. He's worried he'll never see his family again, and he doesn't know what consequences they'll encounter if he blows the whistle. But he has to do it. He's been quietly collecting evidence of this secret for a while, and he's just downloaded the last documents. He tells his employer, the US government, that he needs a couple of weeks off to manage his epilepsy. This buys him a bit of time to leave the country without arousing suspicion. He chooses Hong Kong because he views it as a bastion of free speech. He believes it's one of the few places in the world that could, and would, protect him from the wrath of the US government. There he meets journalists Laura Poitras and Glenn Greenwald, and delivers evidence of what used to be waved off as a conspiracy theory. And so, Edward Snowden becomes one of the most important whistleblowers of our modern time. Snowden's revelations scandalize the world and spark a long overdue debate about individual privacy versus national security. He inspires many young Americans like Default to take a good hard look at how their government functions. Default doesn't want to sit around and let surveillance happen to him. He wants high-ranking intelligence officials to know what it feels like to be spied upon, to have their private information stored and distributed, and to have it used against them. This is when he teams up with the Crackers with Attitude, founded by Cracker, the kid who's always high. Leicestershire, England, 2015. In a housing estate on the outskirts of a sleepy former mining town, there's not a lot to do except get high or go online. In the case of 15-year-old Cracker, he spends his time doing both. He's angry about corruption, about surveillance, but in particular about the US's involvement in the Middle East. He becomes especially focused on Palestine and sees the US as directly responsible for death and suffering in Gaza. He decides to do something about it.
This was political. We heard he was really angry about US foreign policy. So he started a collective called Crackers with Attitude, and then he hacked into sensitive documents online.
One of his first victims is James Clapper, then the National Director of Intelligence of the Obama administration. Clapper, one of the highest-ranking members of the intelligence community, had his phone number and address waiting to be found with just one Google search. This provides Cracker with enough information to hack into his email. He posts proof of it on Twitter, which catches default's attention. Cracker then gets the phone calls to Clapper's house phone rerouted to the Free Palestine Movement. Default tweets his respect to Cracker, and the two start chatting. Edward Snowden himself has given James Clapper a very special shout-out in an interview with a German broadcaster, ARD. Unfortunately, that interview was blocked from US and German television networks. Apparently, the video is immediately taken down every time it's posted on YouTube.
I would say sort of the breaking point is seeing the Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, directly lie under oath to Congress.
What we do not do is spy unlawfully on Americans, or for that matter, spy indiscriminately on the citizens of any country. We only spy for valid foreign intelligence purposes as authorized by law, with multiple layers of oversight to ensure we don't abuse our authorities.
Cracker and Default are livid. Cracker and other hackers loosely connected with CWA team up to target more high-ranking members of the intelligence community. They want to embarrass them and to show them that they aren't as powerful as they think they are. At the top of their list is John Brennan, head of the CIA. Brennan, like Clapper, has enough information online that he basically doxes himself. Cracker looks up his publicly posted phone number and finds out it's a Verizon number. He calls up Verizon's internal tech support and pretends to be an on-site technician who's having trouble helping a customer on-site. Tech support asks Cracker for his employee code, and he just makes one up on the spot. It works. The support technician provides Cracker with access, and suddenly he has the account number, the PIN, and John Brennan's private email address. If you have just enough information on someone, pieced together from different sources, say, their address and last four digits of their social security number, you can easily change the passwords on all kinds of accounts and take it over. And that's exactly what Cracker does with Brennan's AOL account. Once he's in the email account, Cracker gets Brennan's private cell number and shares it with Default. And so they start spam calling the director of the CIA, relentlessly calling him and his family.
I told him he was a piece of shit. Basically, like, y'all are awful people. Like, really. Like, you're not doing any net positive things for the world. You're just not.
John Brennan is freaked out. Sure, the calls are little more than a prank, but how could he know that? At the time, nobody knew who was behind the calls or what their intentions were. Brennan has to lay low for a while in hiding, with extra security details for himself and his family. At the same time, Cracker's breach into Brennan's email gives him access to sensitive documents. Cracker first posts screenshots on Twitter, but then, egged on by Default, and maybe asking himself, what would Snowden do, he decides to hit up WikiLeaks. Julian Assange himself takes interest. He publishes the documents in October 2015. They include Brennan's 47-page SF-86 application, a sensitive form required for obtaining top-secret government security clearance. The form reveals his criminal history, psychological records, past drug abuse, and other details nobody would want about themselves online. Not only that, from Brennan's emails, WikiLeaks publishes Bush-era recommendations for how the presidency should operate in the Middle East. There is also an internal congressional correspondence from the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence that offered suggestions on how to make future interrogation methods, also known as torture, compliant and legal. The breach cost the agency $1.5 million in damages and relocation costs, as several operatives went into hiding before they knew that there was basically no threat level. Above all, it was widely embarrassing. Hacking into Brennan's email was laughably easy. We wonder what John Brennan must have thought while undoubtedly watching this in his relocation house. What fury must have built up inside him? The CWA aren't done. They release more and more information. With control over Clapper's and other operatives' accounts, it's even easier to get people to give up information to in turn access further accounts and databases. They gain access to FBI's deputy director Mark Giuliano's account. There, they discover a database with personal information of 9,000 Department of Justice officials and 20,000 FBI agents. They post it. They then get access to the Justice Department's Joint Automated Booking System, which has records on all US prisoners. They check out the records of fellow hackers like Jeremy Hammond and post those online as well. They wreak havoc and embarrass one institution after another. Did these kids really think that they were going to get away with it?
At the time, I really didn't care. That was towards the end of the run and was just like, all bets are off. I had gone all the way down the rabbit hole. I had just become very disillusioned with people's complacency and their lack of care for what was going on. So it's like, we're going to bring attention to this with like chaos and mayhem.
Kraka knows his actions have poked a very big bear. He knows there will be consequences. He just doesn't know what they'll exactly be. Default is paranoid the whole time, constantly worried about his OPSEC. But he let his guard down. Default became involved with an ex-girlfriend of one of his friends. According to him, he asked his friend in advance if it's okay with him. The friend says sure, go for it. He's way over it. But he isn't. Default and his friend are hanging out one night, drinking and chatting over Xbox Live.
I slip up for the first time ever, being f***ing arrogant and cocky. It comes on the news, CIA director hacked, blah, 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 all this stuff. And I'm like, yeah, that was us, blah, blah. I was like drunk, talking, and just totally like gave myself away.
He never thought his friend would do anything with that information. Hell, he didn't even think his friend would necessarily believe him. But today, Default is pretty sure this friend turned him in. When the FBI raids you, they don't knock politely. FBI agents enter Default's room just as his computer finishes decrypting. They are pointing assault rifles in his face. They drag him out of his room, flash copy his hard drive before it re-encrypts, and seize all of his equipment. Default knows he's finished, but the worst part, watching the agents carry off his hard drive. The hard drive with nearly 1,000 Bitcoin. He blacks out. Kraka, too, gets raided by the British police forces, and his computers are confiscated. One other CWA member gets arrested in the US, and three more in the UK. Since Kraka was underage and in the United Kingdom, he got a lenient sentence. He spent 2 years in a juvenile detention center. He was the first minor in the UK to be imprisoned for hacking. Today, he's keeping his head down and is done with crime. He just wants to make a career in cybersecurity and move on with his life. He did not want to give us an interview. Default, even though he was less involved, paid a much higher price. He went straight to federal prison with a 5-year sentence. He had to pay $145,000 in restitution, and due to COVID regulations, spent a significant amount of that time in solitary confinement. While pleading in court, he said, "I thought what I was doing was right in terms of political justice, but 2 years later, I realized I was completely wrong." Snowden, too, didn't have a relaxed time fighting asylum in Russia. Shortly after his leak, intelligence officials publicly fantasized about killing him. Whether you're a principled whistleblower who truly understands the significance of what you're leaking, or a stone teen furious at the world's injustices, messing with the US government will change the course of your life forever. So make sure it's worth it. In December 2023, the Biden administration renewed a very controversial surveillance program. The act allows the administration to spy on anyone in the world without warrant, including its own citizens. It includes a vast database of electronic communications. It's supposed to be accessed only when there's a legitimate reason to believe it will assist intelligence operations. But a US court ruling in 2023 found that the FBI has already misused this database 278,000 times. Unlawful searches were particularly rampant between 2016 and 2020. They've snooped in the private communications of donors to various congressional candidates. They've been watching suspected January 6 rioters, and they've also been surveilling Black Lives Matter protesters. Maybe they're even surveilling us.
A little bit of factual information for you. America, one of their tricks that they do is they will starve a country of resources to force them to fight or they die. This is how they got Japan into the Second World War. This is how they started the war with Germany both times by stifling their energy supplies, by basically blockading them. This is what they're doing in the Middle East. This is a report from Reuters, which is apparently a trusted news organization. Nobody knows who runs it. US seizes Iranian oil cargo near the Greek islands. By oil cargo, they mean a massive tanker worth billions. And they steal the oil. This is what they do on a regular basis. And they're still doing it now. Any oil tries to leave the Middle East, America will have their special forces board it. They're basically acting like pirates. And they will just take it to America and steal it. And they're doing it to Russian oil cargoes. You see, Russia was actually selling oil at a reduced rate. They were trying to give the world cheap oil, cheap gas, but because they're selling it below America's price, this is from usnews.com. So because they're selling it under the American price to give us cheap energy, America is basically stealing their gas and oil and their tankers because they're selling it at a cheap price. It's what America is doing all around the world. And there's another story here from Teddy English, which is another American news media organization. US forces moved 88 tankers of stolen Syrian oil from the northeastern province of Hasakah to US bases in neighboring Iraq. Yeah, because they basically occupy Iraq and they haven't stopped occupying Iraq. So they stole 88 tankers. We're not talking a bucket or a barrel. Tankers holding billions and billions of money. It's just that the numbers are difficult to compute. Because if you consider it's like hundreds of dollars for a barrel, and they've got a billion gallons or half a trillion liters on a tanker, the numbers that computes to just doesn't bear considering. And that was 88 tankers. It's not like they're shipping it across the planet. They're shipping it to their own American bases. You won't hear that on the media, will you? No, because they're all owned by America.
The two most likely largest inventions of our generation are the internet and the mobile phone. They've changed the world. However, largely to our surprise, they also turned out to be the perfect tools for the surveillance state. It turned out that the capability to collect data, information, and connections about basically any of us and all of us, exactly what we've been hearing throughout the summer through revelations and leaks about Western intelligence agencies, mostly US intelligence agencies, watching over the rest of the world. We've heard about these revelations from June 6th. Edward Snowden started leaking information, top secret classified information, from the US intelligence agencies. And we started learning about things like PRISM and XKeyscore and others. And these are examples of the kinds of programs US intelligence agencies are running right now against the whole rest of the world. And if we look back about the forecasts on surveillance by George Orwell, well, it turns out that George Orwell was an optimist. We are right now seeing much larger scale of tracking of individual citizens than he could have ever imagined. This is the infamous NSA data center in Utah. Due to be opened very soon, it will be both a supercomputing center and a data storage center. You could basically imagine it as a large hall filled with hard drives storing data they are collecting. And it's a pretty big building. How big? Well, I can give you the numbers. 140,000 square meters, but that doesn't really tell you very much. Maybe it's better to imagine it as a comparison. You think about the largest IKEA store you've ever been. This is 5 times larger. How many hard drives can you fit in an IKEA store? We estimate that just the electricity bill for running this data center is going to be in the tens of millions of dollars a year. And this kind of wholesale surveillance means that they can collect our data and keep it basically forever. Keep it for extended periods of time, keep it for years, keep it for decades. And this opens up completely new kinds of risks to us all. And what this is wholesale blanket surveillance on everyone. Not exactly everyone, because the US intelligence only has a legal right to monitor foreigners. They can monitor foreigners when foreigners' data connections end up in the United States or pass through the United States. And monitoring foreigners doesn't sound too bad until you realize that I'm a foreigner and you're a foreigner. In fact, 96% of the planet are foreigners. So it is wholesale blanket surveillance of all of us who use telecommunications and the internet. But don't get me wrong, there are actually types of surveillance that are okay. I love freedom, but even I agree that some surveillance is fine. If the law enforcement is trying to find a murderer or trying to prevent a school shooting, and they have leads and they have suspects, then it's perfectly fine for them to tap the suspect's phone and to intercept his internet communications. I'm not arguing that at all. But that's not what programs like PRISM are about. They're not about doing surveillance on people that they have reason to suspect of some wrongdoings. They're about doing surveillance on people they know are innocent. So the four main arguments supporting surveillance like this, well, the first of all is that whenever you start discussing about these revelations, there will be naysayers trying to minimize the importance of these revelations, saying that, you know, we knew all this already. We knew it was happening. There's nothing new here. And that's not true. Don't let anybody tell you that we knew this already, because we did not know this already. Our worst fears might have been something like this, but we didn't know this was happening. Now we know for a fact it's happening. We didn't know about this. We didn't know about PRISM. We didn't know about X-Key Score. We didn't know about Cybertrans. We didn't know about Double Arrow. We did not know about Skyrider. All these different programs run by US intelligence agencies. But now we do. And we did not know that US intelligence agencies go to extremes such as infiltrating standardization bodies to sabotage encryption algorithms on purpose. And what that means is that you take something which is secure, an encryption algorithm which is so secure that if you use that algorithm to encrypt one file, nobody can decrypt that file. Even if they take every single computer on the planet just to decrypt that one file, it's going to take millions of years. So that's basically perfectly safe, uncrackable. You take something which is that good, and then you weaken it on purpose, making all of us less secure as an end result. A real-world equivalent would be that intelligence agencies would force some secret PIN code into every single house alarm so they could get into every single house because, you know, bad people might have house alarms. But it would also make all of us less secure as an end result. Backdooring encryption algorithms just boggles the mind. But of course, these intelligence agencies are doing their job. This is what they have been told to do. Do signals intelligence. Monitor telecommunications. Monitor internet traffic. That's what they're trying to do. And since most and very big part of the internet traffic today is encrypted, they're trying to find ways around the encryption. One way is to sabotage encryption algorithms, which is a great example about how US intelligence agencies are running loose. They are completely out of control, and they should be brought back under control. So what do we actually know about the leaks? Everything is based on the files leaked by Mr. Snowden. The very first PRISM slides from the beginning of June detail a collection program where the data is collected from service providers, and they actually go and name the service providers they have access to. They even have a specific date on when the collection of data began for each of the service providers. So, for example, they named that collection from Microsoft started on the 11th of September 2007, for Yahoo on the 12th of March 2008, and then others, Google, Facebook, Skype, Apple, and so on. And every single one of these companies denies. They all say that this simply isn't true, that they are not giving backdoor access to their data. Yet, we have these files. So is one of the parties lying, or is there some other alternative explanation? And one explanation would be that these parties, these service providers, are not cooperating. Instead, they've been hacked. That would explain it. They aren't cooperating. They've been hacked. In this case, they've been hacked by their own government. That might sound outlandish, but we already have cases where this has happened. For example, the case of the Flame malware, which we strongly believe was authored by the US government to spread subverted security of the Windows Update network. Meaning, here, the company was hacked by their own government. And there's more evidence supporting this theory as well. Der Spiegel from Germany leaked more information about the operations run by the elite hacker units operating inside these intelligence agencies. Inside NSA, the unit is called TAO, Tailored Access Operations, and inside GCHQ, which is the UK equivalent, it's called NAC, Network Analysis Center. And these recent leaks of these three slides detail an operation run by this GCHQ intelligence agency from United Kingdom, targeting a telco here in Belgium. And what this really means is that an EU country's intelligence agency is breaching the security of a telco of a fellow EU country on purpose. And they discuss it in their slides completely casually. Business as usual. Here's the primary target, here's the secondary target, here's the teaming. They probably have a team building on Thursday evening in a pub. They even use cheesy PowerPoint clip art like success when they gain access to services like this. What the hell? Then there's the argument that, okay, yes, this might be going on, but other countries are doing it as well. All countries spy. And maybe that's true. Many countries spy, not all of them. But let's take an example. Let's take, for example, Sweden. I'm speaking Sweden because Sweden has a little bit similar law to the United States. When your data traffic goes through Sweden, their intelligence agency has a legal right, by the law, to intercept that traffic. All right, how many Swedish decision makers and politicians and business leaders use every day US-based services? Run Windows or OS X, or use Facebook or LinkedIn, or store their data in clouds like iCloud or SkyDrive or Dropbox, or maybe use online services like Amazon Web Services or Salesforce? And the answer is every single Swedish business leader does that every single day. And then we turn it around. How many American leaders use Swedish webmails and cloud services? And the answer is zero. So this is not balanced. It's not balanced by any means, not even close. And when we do have the occasional European success story, even those then typically end up being sold to the United States. Like Skype used to be secure. It used to be end-to-end encrypted. Then it was sold to the United States. Today, it no longer is secure. So once again, we take something which is secure and then we make it less secure on purpose, making all of us less secure as an outcome. And then the argument that the United States is only fighting terrorists. It's the war on terror. You shouldn't worry about it. Well, it's not the war on terror. Yes, part of it is war on terror. And yes, there are terrorists, and they do kill and maim, and we should fight them. But we know through these leaks that they've used the same techniques to listen to phone calls of European leaders, to tap the email of residents of Mexico and Brazil, to read email traffic inside United Nations headquarters and EU Parliament. And I don't think they're trying to find terrorists from inside EU Parliament. It's not the war on terror. Part of it might be. And there are terrorists. But are we really thinking about terrorists as such an existential threat that we're willing to do anything at all to fight them? Are the Americans ready to throw away the Constitution, throw it into trash, just because there are terrorists? And the same thing with the Bill of Rights and all the amendments and the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and the EU conventions on human rights and fundamental freedoms and the press freedom. Do we really think terrorism is such an existential threat we're ready to do anything at all? But people cared about terrorists, and then they think maybe that surveillance is okay because, you know, they have nothing to hide. Feel free to survey me if that helps. And whoever tells you that they have nothing to hide simply haven't thought about this long enough. We have this thing called privacy. And if you really think that you have nothing to hide, please make sure that's the first thing you tell me, because then I know that I should not trust you with any secrets, because obviously you can't keep a secret. But people are brutally honest with the internet. And when these leaks started, many people were asking me about this. And I have nothing to hide. I'm not doing anything bad or anything illegal. Yet, I have nothing that I would in particular like to share with an intelligence agency, especially a foreign intelligence agency. And if we indeed need a big brother, I would much rather have a domestic big brother than a foreign big brother. And when the leaks started, the very first thing I tweeted about this was a comment about how, when you've been using search engines, you've been potentially leaking all that to US intelligence. And 2 minutes later, I got a reply by somebody called Kimberly from the United States challenging me, like, why am I worried about this? Like, what am I sending to worry about this? Am I sending naked pictures or something? And my answer to Kimberly was that what I'm sending is none of your business. And it should be none of your government's business either. Because that's what it's about. It's about privacy. Privacy is non-negotiable. It should be built in to all the systems we use. And one thing we should all understand is that we are brutally honest with search engines. You show me your search history, and I'll find something incriminating or something embarrassing there in 5 minutes. We are more honest with search engines than we are with our families. Search engines know more about you than your family members know about you. And this is all the kind of information we're giving away. We're giving away to the United States. And surveillance changes history. We know this through examples of corrupt presidents like Nixon. Imagine if he would have had the kind of surveillance tools that are available today. And let me actually quote the president of Brazil, Ms. Dilma Rousseff. She was one of the targets of NSA surveillance. Her email was read. And she spoke at United Nations headquarters, and she said, If there's no right to privacy, there can be no true freedom of expression and opinion, and therefore there can be no effective democracy. That's what it's about. Privacy is the building block of our democracies. And to quote a fellow security researcher, Marcus Ranum, he said that the United States is right now treating the internet as it would be treating one of its colonies. So we're back to the age of colonization. And we, the foreign users of the internet, we should think about Americans as our masters. So Mr. Snowden, he's been blamed for many things. Some are blaming him for causing problems to the US cloud industry and software companies with these revelations. And blaming Snowden for causing problems to the US cloud industry would be the equivalent of blaming Al Gore for causing global warming. So, what is there to be done? Should we worry? No, we shouldn't worry. We should be angry, because this is wrong, and it's rude, and it should not be done. But that's not going to really change the situation. What's going to change the situation for the rest of the world is to try to steer away from systems built in the United States. And that's much easier said than done. How do you do that? A single country, any single country in Europe, cannot replace and build replacements for the US-made operating systems and cloud services. But maybe you don't have to do it alone. Maybe you can do it together with other countries. And the solution is open source. By building together open, free, secure systems, we can go around such surveillance. And then one country doesn't have to solve the problem by itself. It only has to solve one little problem. And to quote a fellow security researcher, Haron Mer, one country only has to make a small wave. But those small waves together become a tide. And the tide will lift all the boats up at the same time. And the tide we will build with secure, free, open source systems will become the tide that will lift all of us up and above the surveillance state. Thank you very much.
You know that I've criticized quite vigorously Rand Paul and the theater that he has orchestrated for many now years, where he has the theatrics of having Anthony Fauci in front of Congress. Tragically, aiding and abetting his crime of lying to Congress. And one has to ask very simple questions, which is why the House Select Committee, for example, or Rand Paul or Ron Johnson or any of the people who actually are taking credit for this kind of COVID accountability brand, one has to ask the question, why is it that they never deliver the knockout blow? Because this has never been an investigation. This has been not unlike many other times in American history, where what we do is we have a president that gets shot, and there are seemingly too many bullets to count how many times the president gets struck, but we have a hearing, and then we come up with the official narrative, and we tell people that's what the official narrative is. And before long, the public largely comes to distrust the institutions that are supposed to be in the public interest, because they know they're being lied to. That's the tragedy. There's no real value in the theater. It is like, in fact, going to the theater. But I think what happens is that we get more and more proof that the public accountability is not just not going to happen. It's actually a visual assault to our senses to say that we're going to go ahead and hold the theatrics of this alleged inquiry, only to then let the perpetrators of the crime walk free. So ironically, what we do is we actually build the illusion that unfortunately then gets created, which is we don't need to worry because there was an investigation. The problem is we're going to be here again. We're going to have this experience again. We are going to have the next manufactured pandemic to create the next subversion of liberty. And so let's get really precise. There is one piece of evidence that should have been presented to Anthony Fauci during the hearing. It happens to be a letter from October 2014 sent to the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And in that letter, what we have unambiguously is actually a statement that is made by NIAID authorizing Ralph Baric to continue his gain of function research on a chimera of coronavirus. And you see, October 21st, 2014, not only was the gain of function research authorized in this letter in direct violation of the moratorium, but more tragically, we find out that the NIAID authorized putting this particular pathogen into living systems. If you're making a biological weapon And when I use that term bioweapon, I'm actually using that term because Ralph Baric in 2005 actually presented to the world that this synthetic coronavirus that he was working on was a biowarfare enabling technology. His words, not mine. Public officials got a 9-figure kickback for killing Americans, for shutting down the economy, for destroying lives of well-meaning citizens of this country. And we actually think that somehow or another, putting a guy on the hot seat in front of Congress for 8 hours is somehow pain enough for him because what? He's a dawdling old grandfather? I'm sorry. Ralph Baric, Peter Daszak, and Anthony Fauci are co-conspiring, racketeering criminals. And if we were actually Elliot Ness in the 1920s, we'd be calling them gangsters and thugs, and we'd be putting them in jail. And we'd actually have people like Elliot Ness running around trying to figure out how to get them in jail. But you know what we have? We have a bunch of pathetic fundraising congressmen and women who are using the theater of this to actually seduce the well-meaning members of the public. They want to see justice. I'm not having a go at them. But let's be really clear. Anyone who celebrated the hearing is aiding and abetting the criminal acts of a racketeering organization that in the 1940s and by 1953 had given itself absolute immunity from criminal prosecution for the murder of Americans and for murder of people around the world. And we are actually making the mistake of saying, well, at least he had his day in court. No, ladies and gentlemen, he didn't have his day in court. He had the theater that your members of Congress will now use as fundraising fodder to say that they're holding people accountable. Laughable. Accountable? We're holding them accountable? No, we're not holding anybody accountable. Because accountability in this case would be the felonies that all require $100 million per count fines and up to 100 years in prison. That's accountable. That's accountable. And up until now, there has been no accountability whatsoever.
Welcome back. We began that set with Truth Seekers Worldwide, followed by a gem from a TikToker named LastStand01. Then we heard from the Darknet Diaries, courtesy of Fern, and we got an ode to our government's thievery from a channel called News Social Commentary. Mikko Haipanen then reminded us that the NSA has never been and will never be on the side of the people, and Dr. David Martin gave us a COVID theater review. Once summer is behind us, I will probably have more to say myself, though others are speaking well enough for me at the moment. Here's hoping we make it through the fall without a single hurricane, although my garden would love a few tropical storms, and if that happened, I wouldn't even be mad. And with that thought in mind, I want to thank you for hanging out with me tonight. I hope you'll come back next Saturday at 12 a.m. Sunday. Till then, I will play us out with music from an incredibly talented and prolific young man who's putting many of our 60s icons to shame. Jesse Wells. Sweet dreams.
Well, if you're looking for purpose in the current circus, if you're seeking respect and attention, if you're in need of a gig that'll help you feel big, come with me and put some folks in detention. Just last week was kind of rough. I put a kid in cuffs and zip-tied a woman to a van. We can sneak around town hunting working folks down. I hear they get a great benefit plan. Join ICE, boy, ain't it nice. Join ICE, take my advice. If you're lacking control and authority, come with me and hunt down minorities. Join ICE. Well, I failed the academy, the cops weren't having me, the army didn't sound that fun, so I found me a paramilitary operation that was keen to hand me a gun. See, I got picked on in school, I never felt that cool, there's a hole in my soul that just rages. All the women turned me down, they told me I was a clown. Well, won't you look at me now, I'm putting folks in cages. At ICE, they got great hours, join ICE for respect and power. They got a sign-on bonus of 50 grand. They're in need of you needing to feel like a man. Join ICE. Join ICE. If you worked a little harder, then you'd have a lot more. The blame and the shame's on you for being so damn poor. It ain't the price gouging and it ain't the inflation. It ain't everyone above you trying to make a buck from you in school and the whole congregation. I had that reduced lunch, I had the benefit cards. Never occurred to me to blame my family for life being so damn hard. I should have paid attention back when I was in school. Then I could figure up the tax, I would know a lot of facts. I missed the class where they taught the rules. I was memorizing capitals, I was in the spelling bee. I must have skipped the part where they taught the art of private equity. I was selling chocolate bars, I had a disorder. I was cutting up a frog, got lost in the fog, learning how to play recorder. If you only worked a little harder. A little harder. If you worked a little harder. If you worked a little harder, then you'd have a lot more. So the shame and the blame's on you for being so damn poor. It ain't the banks, and it ain't the taxes. It ain't the payday loans and high rent homes. Predatory fees and practices, wave your dumb flag, whatever it means. But you should ask yourself, when it comes to health of the poor, really all that free? If you worked a little harder, if you worked a little harder, if you worked a little harder, you'd have a lot more. So the blame and the shame's on you for being so damn poor, yeah. When I was just a boy, my mama asked me this. She said, son, what do you want to be? I said, a big philanthropist, but dead as my oil. And illness is my business. With guns as my retirement and war as my mistress. I'm gonna be an oligarch with a whole bunch of rockets. I'd get them two sides fighting and I'd empty both of their pockets. And if I got bored or money weary, I'd try my hand in dabbling in social engineering. I'm gonna be a billionaire with a big foundation. In shadows, but I'd come right out and I'd rule the nation. I'm gonna do all my own laundry in a third world nation state. Experiment with the locals like some philanthropic saint. And I'd never make a cure, not get you a treatment plan. You can die in slow installments and I'll bleed you while I can. And I'd travel around the planet in a big old mystery jet. What I did would be my business, and what you did I would collect. If I was a philanthropist, just run around philanthropist. Not a whole lot of help just for myself, but I gotta make it look convincing. both got some hard knocks we might have earned. Some folks go to school, others have to learn that most of life is wishing, trying to get back to a memory of a memory you never might have had. My heart's a locomotive, runs on black and coal and cigarettes and coffee. I can never roll my own on barn matches from the Padre, hearing church bells toll, wondering what the hell's the difference between dying and getting old. That can't be right. What year is it this year tonight? If I die, I'll die of fright. That can't be right. That acid flashback really, really cracked my eyes. Do the right drug once, you'll get to do it twice. And now I'm crowing about places and things I've never been. You know I'm never gonna whore it out and take that gig again. I believe the light is crackling round the edge of anesthesia, lying on a table with the whole world reaching in ya. Hope to Jesus, Buddha, Bob, that they wash their hands. There's no class action passage to break all my shitty bands. That can't be right. What year is it this year tonight? If I die, I'll die of fright. That can't be right. When I was younger, it confused me. Now I think I get it. My old man, he don't like pictures, especially if he's in them. Time is not a mirror, it's some distorted view of the way you thought you was and what you thought they thought of you. And all the trash that I had tossed out, it weren't by no means good. But just 'cause someone tells you, don't really mean you should. My friends would try and cheer me up the best they knew to do. There's no rescue in a diver with two cinder blocks for shoes. That can't be right. What year is it this year tonight? If I die, I'll die of fright. That can't be right. I'm still agog with mortal dogs and skills I don't possess. I'm a practitioner of practice, I'm giving it my best. I'm left and I'm still leaving, I got several miles to go. I ain't ready to do something till there's something I'm ready for. There's a pillar in the desert and it's all lit with flames. It's been burning there for eons. It's the end of all the days. We owe apologies and ass whoopings. It seems to even out. You can't never know you're happy if you've never lived without, and that's alright. What year is it this year tonight? If I die, I'll die of fright. That can't be right. That can't be right. What year is it this year tonight? Four white horses towards the light. That can't be right. Got me a red house and a red car, runs on big red batteries. They used to be blue 15 minutes ago, but they turned red just for me. I got me a red horse and I ride it. I got some blue friends, they're the best. We used to fly around the world on a big jet plane they call the Lolita Express. I got me a red tie and it's 10 feet long and it matches my red hat. I got me a red bird and a red fish, a red dog and got me a red pen and I use it. I got a big red chainsaw too. My red friend likes that white powder, makes his arms do weird salutes. When the war gets here, we're all gonna hold hands. All the Baptists and the Catholics, all the Marxists and the fascists. When the war gets here, we're gonna get on the level. Everyone looks a little bit nicer when you finally meet the devil. I had me a red talk on a red day, looking for a thank you dressed in blue. If you want to win a war, my friend, you know you better wear a suit. I got me a red bulldog, technocratic bootstrap tugging buddy. He wrote an elegy for a people he don't know, and it ain't funny. There's a deep swamp, and I'll drain it, for my people are in danger. Who would have ever thought the deep state were the National Park Rangers? I got me some red pills and a bottle. I got black and blue ones too. All the pills are all the same. The illusion is you choose. When the war gets here, we're all gonna hold hands. All the cowboys and the hippies, put away this change misgivings. When the war gets here, we're gonna get on the level. Everyone looks a little bit nicer when you finally meet the devil. When the kings cut friend and foe, and every nation knows his wrath. When he's dead in 20 years, we'll be here and they'll be back. When we're all hung out to dry by our savior technocrats, it won't matter if you're neocon or mega Democrats. When the war gets here, we're all gonna hold hands. All the Baptists and the Catholics, all the Marxists and the fascists. War gets here, we're gonna get on the level. Everyone looks a little bit nicer when you finally meet the devil. Coke with the common folk in a bar down in Tel Aviv. When in walked my friend, he was grinning a grin, 'cause he knows that the tab's on me. Then came a man in black on a camel's back with an oil barrel and a gun. He had a book like us but took it serious. Said, I told you I ain't here for fun. I said, brother, this place looks familiar. Ain't I been here a time before? I get the deja vu when I'm drinking with you. You know, I blacked out a little in the last Cold War. I walked away and put a dime in the jukebox. I love to hear me that old fortunate son. While I turned my back, he smacked the man in the black. A bona fide beat him up had begun. The fists were flying, the people were dying. He said, look out, the man's got a nuke. But he's been saying that for years to anyone with ears. Every time he needs a gun to shoot, I said, brother, this place looks familiar. And I've been here a time before. Maybe, maybe not. You know, it gets a little hot. I blacked out a little in the Iraq. From the ugly and evil, we was
hiding in the mud in the beer. They blew up my jukebox and ruined all my peace talks. The tab was getting higher here. I said, leave me alone. I want to go home. I told my people I'm a man of peace. He said, this is your new hobby. Meet me in the lobby and leave your wallet with me. I said, brother, this place seems familiar. Ain't I been here a time before? I get the deja vu when I'm drinking with you. I got a feeling I'll be back for more.
Well, your president won't help your non-hate brown folks. They won't make your troubles disappear. They can't change the fact you're broke. They won't turn everyone woke. There ain't a whole lot they can do to make you less a slave to fear. It's your president, but it ain't your picnic. Nah, it's a great big club, and honey bunches, we ain't in it. You and me, we ain't the ones to please. Now they got oligarchs and lobbyists and billionaires and gods and kings. Well, your president won't help you love your neighbor. They can't help you find inner peace. They won't change your mind. Them changes start inside, and that's outside their jurisdiction. Well, for now, at least, it ain't your president, and it ain't your picnic. No, it's a great big club, and honey bunches, you ain't in it. You and me, we ain't the ones to please. No, they got oligarchs and lobbyists and billionaires and gods and kings and thieves, things you can't see.